There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Grill. 3 hours of uninterrupted sport coming your way between now and 6 o'clock. Feel free to get your thoughts into us. How do you do that? You text us on 4001. You get in touch at Dubai Eye Sport. You follow any of the team on their individual handles, or equally, you can come on down here and be part of the fun at Barasti. Broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. What do we have for you today? Rugby Championship live at the moment. Second game of the Rugby Championship, which has already thrown up a couple of headlines earlier on today. So we'll be straight into that one for you. Tottenham against Liverpool. That's just around the corner, about 25 minutes away. That's your half past kickoff. We've got Newcastle against Arsenal live for you here on Dubai. I win a 3.8 from 6 o'clock. And stay tuned straight after that for Watford against Man U. Loads of football to get through. We'll have all the team news and we'll be talking to the crew at TalkSport ahead of the Newcastle-Arsenal game. T20 Blast Finals down at Edgbaston. We've got Singapore Pole qualifying. The Gallagher Premiership Rugby is back for its third weekend. And we've got the small matter of one of the most highly anticipated fights for quite some time. All that to look forward to between now and six.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Get thee down to Barasti, where the game is always on. The game on the big screen at the moment is Australia against the Pumas, against Argentina, and what has been a day that the record books have been rewritten down in New Zealand a little earlier on today. We'll have more details on that one. A shock in New Zealand as the Springboks put one over New Zealand down in Wellington, and it could be a shock on the cards over in Australia as well, as the Pumas have started the second half the stronger of the two teams, going over in just the first couple of minutes of the second half. They lead the Wallabies at the moment. We'll bring you details of that one very shortly. I say we because I've been joined by the Dream Team this morning. No sitting on the bench for these two, that's for sure. They've joined us live and direct to bring us all the latest from the world of sport. It is a warm grill welcome to Robbie Greenfield. RG, good to have you on board.
It's great to be here, Tom.
And we've got this man alongside us as well. Chris McCarty is with us, present throughout the next couple of hours. Looking forward to it?
I certainly am, Tom. Yes, very good afternoon to you and the listeners. Looking forward to the early kickoff in the Premier League, undoubtedly. Liverpool down at Wembley, taking on Tottenham Hotspur, two teams with aspirations of perhaps going all the way and winning the title in the Premier League this season. So looking forward to that, and just looking forward to uninterrupted conversation on all things sport for the next 3 hours.
Listen, let's talk sport straight from the off if we can, because we've got the Premier League, which is back, as you mentioned. Tottenham against Liverpool, looking forward to that. Newcastle Arsenal is our life, plus all the goals from the 6 o'clocks as well, and then Watford against Manchester United. We didn't have any Premier League action last weekend because we were all focusing on internationals and, of course, the UEFA Nation. What have we learned from these internationals?
Nothing.
What have we learned from them?
We've learned that meaningless competitive football is just as meaningless as meaningless friendlies, Tom, I think is what we've learned. Yeah, it's been a bit bizarre. Spain had a good fortnight, though, in all fairness to them. Luis Enrique in charge of a new-look team that was so disappointing in Russia, and they thumped the finalist Croatia 6-0, and they beat England as well. So they are sailing atop a three-team group in the League of Nations. We did read the blueprint, or the small print, I should say, as to how it's all supposed to work. After three or four read-throughs, I was none the wiser.
Yeah.
So, you know, I prefer to think of it as just a little stopgap between European Championships and the World Cup, of course.
It just seems to come so quickly after the World Cup. The World Cup was such a high as well, and how it gives these great expectations of the national teams going into the Nations Cup. It just seemed to be that it's just too soon for it.
It is too soon, and there's a lot of people, myself included, that would complain the fact that it is too soon. We're only four games into the domestic club season, and then the boys are off on international duty. It does come too soon. FIFA will say, in their infinite wisdom, that there needs to be international breaks. You know, you'll always get people complaining about them. There's not many people, certainly of my group of friends, and Robbie included, yourself included as well, Tom, that enjoys the international break. I'm a Scotland fan, yeah. And okay, we won. We beat Albania by 2-0 in our first competitive match. We were also thrashed by Belgium 4-0. So we've not had much to cheer about, us Scots, over the years. I just find it it is a little ludicrous. We're just getting up to speed with a new domestic season, and then we're off for 2 weeks. What it has done, it's whetted the appetite, though, because I can't wait for the Premier League.
Yeah, but it must play havoc for managerial, for managers in the Premier League and other leagues, not just Premier League, but big leagues across the whole of Europe, because, you know, you've just got your team back from pre-season. They've been away, all your big guns have been away for a long time with the World Cup, and then you lose them within 3 weeks of the season starting.
I understand why national teams have to play regularly. I think the reason why the World Cup was so great was because we saw a high quality of football, and you can only really get that if those teams are playing regular football with one another. But 4 weeks into a new season, it beggars belief as to why there would then be this 10-day break. Yeah. It's a lot of football as well for players to be playing. There are injury problems, of course, and it just takes the early momentum that the season built up from club football, which we were all looking forward to resuming. And as Chris said, we're happy to have it back, but it just seems like a really odd timing to have this.
And what it does do is it makes things really interesting this weekend. I always feel that there is opportunities for the smaller teams to have a real good go after an international break. We know that a lot of players from the likes of Chelsea, Manchester United, Manchester City, they've all been travelling with their nations, and that gives the smaller teams a real chance to make a fist of it this weekend. And a little disappointed that we're starting with Liverpool-Tottenham, or Tottenham-Liverpool as the case may be. It's down at Wembley this afternoon. It's just a shame that they couldn't have had those boys a week of training. I always think that the big games after an international break, they always flatter to deceive a little bit. And having said that, I'm sure it'll probably now be a four-all classic at Wembley in the next half hour when it kicks
off. We'll have team news for you on that one very, very shortly. Got to talk Rugby Championship quickly. Why? Because that's the noise you can hear behind us down here at Barasti. And it is, if things stay the same, well, another shock on the cards as well. The Pumas are down in Australia. It is the visitors who lead by 17 points to 14. We're about 5-10 minutes into the second half, so still plenty to play for in this one. This comes off the back of a shock result down in Wellington, New Zealand earlier.
Quite staggering, actually. The fact that if it was in South Africa, then you might be able to explain it, but the fact that it is in New Zealand really has sent ripples through the world of rugby. A quite extraordinary result, especially given the fact, Tom, that South Africa were a man down for the final 10 minutes or so in this one. But South Africa have gone to Wellington, as you say. They have beaten New Zealand by an incredible margin of 36 points to 34. Could not have been closer. New Zealand actually outscored them in terms of tries by a margin of 6-5, but South Africa, with more penalty kicks and with a better conversion rate as well, managed to get home just by the skin of their teeth. But what a performance! And we've been talking a long time about the evolution of South African rugby under Rassie Erasmus. They were so poor under Alistair Kutsir, and they've had their issues as well. But to come back and to beat the best team in the world, which we were bemoaning just the other week on our sports show, that they were invincible, they were unbeatable, and that was sucking the drama out of rugby. Well, just as we say that is the beautiful thing about sport, that the drama has been injected back into it, because they have lost, and given the fact that they've lost in New Zealand, South Africa will now be thinking, well, if we can beat them on their patch, we can beat them on ours as well.
2 weeks from
suddenly
now,
the Rugby Championship is a competition again.
Indeed it is.
As opposed to a procession.
I think that's a really good point you make there. You know, it opens it up, because as you rightly say, they've got to go in 2 weeks down to Pretoria. They've got to play down there against the Box at home. And they've still got the small matter of the Pumas away. And we've seen what the Pumas have been doing in this tournament recently. They lead Australia by 20 points to 14 with 48 on the clock at the moment. They've put together some great performances off the back of Les Jaguares' performances in Super 14. And that's going to be a tough one to go to for the All Blacks, for any
absolutely.
Team to go down
there. I mean, absolutely, you're right. And it will be the kick up the backside. I'm sure Steve Hansen, and I've got to say as well, Kieran Reid, no shortage again. What an individual he is. So gracious in defeat. Very complimentary of what the Springbok did. And you're absolutely right. There are still tests that lie await. But one thing we know from the All Blacks is they normally follow up defeat with an absolute masterclass not long after. So I'm expecting this to be a bit of a wake-up call for them. I think it's important we give context to this one. Don't want to take anything away from the Springbok, but Bolden Barrett probably had the worst game he's had in an All Black shirt. Missed conversion after conversion after conversion. If he had taken his chances, then it would have been a different story. I get it, though. Sport is all about that. If you don't take your chances, I don't want to take anything away from Springbok. They've gone down to New Zealand. I think it's their first win down there since 2009. So they've had to wait 9 years to get a result. They've done that, and what that will do for confidence, for their momentum, it does mean that all eyes will be on Pretoria in a fortnight time, because that will be an absolute belter. Springbok against the All Blacks.
Uncharacteristic errors from the Springboks. As you mentioned, from the All Blacks, four missed kicks during that game as well. That'll disappoint Steve Hansen. But at the same time, I mean, as you rightly mentioned just a few minutes ago, down to 14 for the majority of the last 15 minutes or so, and just that stout defence, and just it was a great game, especially for, I mean, obviously not a great game for New Zealand supporters, but for anyone that loves their rugby, that was a game that delivered.
Yeah, and not the first time we've seen an absolute belter of a game involving South Africa in the last couple of months. That their opening test against England was astonishing. I think they were 23-3 down in the early stages of that match and went on to win the match. They've obviously made great strides, but they're obviously not the finished product either. That they've got inconsistencies there, and the Springboks have always been a big physical team, and I think given that the fact that they were doing most of the last 10 minutes was stout defensive work, I think they seized the moment and they realised that this was an opportunity that doesn't come along very often, and they were inspired for those final 10 minutes. But yeah, just on Beauden Barrett, I mean, he was so brilliant against Australia in the Bledisloe Cup. Another off day now. We're talking about him potentially stepping up and being the next Dan Carter. Clear that he's not quite at that level yet, but he's still an astonishingly good player.
Absolutely. He's had one bad game. Doesn't mean that he's a bad player. And I think it is important. There'll be a lot of listeners this afternoon probably nodding, hopefully nodding with this statement. It's important that rugby has a good Springbok team. And it's nice to see them. I think for the longevity, for the health of world rugby, it needs more teams. It needs your Safas to step up the Springbok. It needs your Wallabies. And okay, they're struggling against the Argies. Ledesma's done an incredible job there. And you look at Argentina, it's great that they're now evolving and turning into a real powerhouse in world rugby, because the more teams there are that can go toe-to-toe with the All Blacks, as we said a couple of weeks ago on our show, rugby will be in a better place for it.
Yeah, it's okay having a dominant team. I think everyone wants that. People love that in sport. Dominance is always something that is news headline making, and people are drawn to it. It's when that dominance crosses into the line of these guys cannot be beaten.
Yes.
And that was the big fear with the All Blacks. They were beaten so infrequently that we were thinking, well, okay, this is all a bit writings on the wall. It's got a sense of inevitability about it. This result shatters that a little. And teams will now think, you know, having seen the All Blacks thrash Australia twice in a row and looking at this scoreline, Argentina 20, Australia 14, you know, they've got their issues there. And Michael Checker, I know that Australian rugby has come out and backed him, but I wonder if that is the prudent move and whether they should look at other options now, because it's not just a case of losing heavily to the All Blacks. They've not been performing to a high level for a long time. And I know that we have Alex Bruhn on our show quite regularly, and he's a big follower of Australian rugby, and he just kind of shrugs and says, well, it's their fourth sport. You know, they focus on other things. They focus on Aussie rules. They focus on cricket.
Soccer.
And soccer as well. So it perhaps runs a little deeper than just the identity of the coach, but there's clearly some issues there in Australian rugby.
You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Barusti, where the game is well and truly on. If you would like to watch some sport in high definition, live and on a big screen, get yourself down here to Barusti. It's the Rugby Championship on the big screen at the moment, but worry not, you've got Tottenham against Liverpool, you've got all sorts of other sports. Basically, if there's live sport being played around the world at the moment, you'll find it on a screen down here at Barusti. Talking of that live sport, Spanish La Liga, live game at the moment. Atletico Madrid are in action against Eibar. 14 minutes into that one, 0-0. We'll give some team news from Atletico's point of view on that very shortly, and we'll give you team news from the early kickoff in the Premier League.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barusti, where the game is always on.
Tottenham against Liverpool coming your way very, very shortly. Just as we say that, is the Wallabies going over the line, so that will close the deficit between these two teams somewhat. We'll bring you score updates in just a few seconds' time. In fact, they've just popped up. Robbie Greenfield can bring us the latest.
Yeah, now Argentina 20, Australia 19, with a conversion to come. Conversion is, I would say, not quite on the touchline, but relatively wide out, so we'll see if they can be successful in making that conversion. 20-19, Australia with a chance to take a narrow lead, though.
That's what's going on in the Rugby Championship, and we've got football coming our way very, very shortly. We'll have the first of our games from the Premier League, Tottenham against Liverpool, live from Wembley. Let's get some thoughts from the managers on this one. Let's start with Jurgen Klopp. Let's just say that Gary Neville hasn't exactly endeared himself to Jurgen with some comments he made about the Liverpool team and the Liverpool manager early on this week.
So I don't know exactly what it means, but to focus on one competition. Last year, for example, we had no chance to focus on one competition because we had to qualify for the Champions League, and I don't think that even Gary Neville would have said in a quarterfinals in the Champions League, come on, let City win, and so they are anyway champions or whatever. That doesn't work like this. It's a bit, I don't want to be too critical about, because I don't know exactly how he said it, but it's a bit, sitting in an office and talking about football is completely different to doing the job, to be honest. But it's an opinion, and maybe, what did he say about Man United in that case, to be honest? I thought it's a club he's more interested in. Nothing.
Those are the thoughts of Jurgen Klopp, Chris McCarthy alongside me. What did Neville say?
I'm chuckling at both. We'll get to comments that were made by Jamie Carragher. Except what Gary Neville did say, Tom, was he made the point that for him, Liverpool should concentrate on just the league this season. He was saying that they should forget the Champions League, that they've got a good team, and that he thinks they've got a good chance of winning the league. Now, Jurgen is right to make the point that that's a dangerous game to play, that when you start concentrating on just one tournament, then it often can bite you in the backside. So for him, his job, Jurgen Klopp, is to look after the well-being and the best interests of Liverpool Football Club. Now, we saw last season they went oh so close to winning the Champions League. I think they're set up again this season to be very dangerous in the UEFA Champions League. So I get where Gary's coming from, because Gary's looking at it not from a Manchester United point of view. He's looking at Liverpool, and he sees what I see, that they have got a wonderful opportunity to win the league. But again, it's a squad game. If you start prioritising one over another, it can become very dangerous. And Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp, they just need to look after themselves in whatever tournament that is.
I think Gary Neville is probably one of the more intelligent pundits out there in terms of, you know, to be fair, yeah. He always makes a good case, I think. And I think it's been interesting to see him in his arguments with journalists. He seems to always have the answers, Gary Neville. He's a very rational and
measured
guy, and he approaches it very analytically. I have to say, he's barking up the wrong tree here, though. I mean, what?
I can see what he's coming from.
Yeah, what he means is to give himself the best possible chance of winning the Premier League. What, fall on their sword in the Champions League?
It doesn't
even make sense. And you know, winning breeds confidence, and winning breeds more winning, and that's historically what's happened. And
absolutely.
And interestingly enough, when City played Liverpool last season, I think that was a long break, and it was the first game after City had just had a bit of a lull in the league, and that probably contributed to their performance in the Champions League. So I think the two go hand in hand. We see with Real Madrid, when the knockout stages of the Champions League kick in, they tend to do better in La Liga domestically as well. They just tend to play better football because they're just more focused on that goal. So I think, I wouldn't... Why would you sacrifice deliberately a competition, if that's what he's saying?
And that's,
I don't understand that at all. I don't get that rationale
at
all.
That's exactly what he was meaning. And Jurgen Klopp, I did find it funny that he pointed out that those sitting in offices, it's far easier to pass judgment. I think that was a little poke at Gary Neville, the fact that he went to Valencia and did awful as Valencia manager. Let us not forget that. And I did chuckle there, though, that final comment. He's former Manchester United. He should stick to commenting about Manchester United. Well, Jamie Carragher this past week has been commenting about Marcus Rashford, and that led to an extraordinary press conference yesterday. Jose Mourinho, it was almost Rafa Benitez, the facts rant. He had a sheet of paper. He was right. Everything he said was spot on about the minutes that Marcus Rashford has been given by Jose Mourinho. He has been a massive supporter of him, and he was pointing out that I don't see the same managers getting the same questions. For example, Maurizio Sarri with Ruben Loftus-Cheek and other young English talents that perhaps haven't been given enough time on the football field. Jose Mourinho was pointing out that Marcus Rashford has been given adequate opportunities at that football club.
Tottenham against Liverpool is the early game. We've got a bit of team news coming through as well. Chris, any big surprises?
Yeah, a little for me. It's interesting, Mauricio Pochettino, he has gone back to a back four, which we saw him before the international break play a back three. He went in with a back three at Old Trafford against Manchester United, that 3-0 win, of course, but he's reverted back to a back four. Kieran Trippier right back, the two centre-halves, the two Belgians, Toby Alderweireld and Jan Vertonghen, and it will be Danny Rose in at left back ahead of Ben Davies. Then comes the midfield three. Great to see Harry Winks back, the young Englishman. He's in alongside Eric Dier and Moussa Dembele. Christian Eriksen and Lucas Moura, they will be the creative, I guess, forces that will try and unlock the Liverpool defence, and then it will be the captain, the skipper, number 10, Harry Kane, leading the line for Tottenham. So the one shot there, Davinson Sanchez, who I'm such a huge fan of, he's been a wonderful addition, not only to Spurs, but to the Premier League, he is left on the bench. So it will be a 4-3-3 formation, 4-5-1. Four Spurs out of possession.
I take your point that you said a little bit earlier on, it'd be quite nice to keep this game for maybe later on today or a little later on, but I suppose that there's something to be said from coming back from the paucity of football over the last couple of weeks, club football that is, because of the international break, with a game like this, a lot at stake, two teams with title ambitions as well, two teams have hit their straps early on in the season. I mean, it's a mouthwatering prospect.
It really is. It's a big test for Liverpool. It's a big test for their credentials. They've been flawless thus far. Tottenham produced that performance against Manchester United that they've had such a poor run of results at Old Trafford that I think that made a lot of people stand up and take notice. I think the problems engulfing Manchester United were the focus in the aftermath of that match, and Tottenham's performance in the second half was somewhat lost in the furore and the theatrics of Jose Mourinho in that press conference after the game. But you know, let's not take anything away from Spurs' performance there. The disappointment for them, and you said it, Chris, as well, they then went to Watford with a golden opportunity. Watford have had a great start to the
Fantastic.
Season as well, and Watford outfought them. I think that was the bottom line. They were just more aggressive, they were more physical, and they wanted it a bit more on the day, and they got the 2-1 win. So Tottenham, not back to the drawing board, but just having had that great progressive result against Manchester United, they failed to follow it up. There's a sense, really, that we're looking at a title challenging or maybe even a title-winning team in Liverpool. I don't think any of us would particularly think that Spurs are at that place right now. That being said, it is at Wembley, and I think if I'm right in saying, Liverpool were convincing winners of this fixture last season.
No, they were given an absolute hiding. 4-0, I think it was, on the day.
Really?
Dejan Lovren hooked after 35 minutes. They got their revenge in the Anfield match.
Yes, they were,
match.
Sorry.
They
no,
were,
you're
they
right.
were
you're
absolutely,
absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Smashed. In the corresponding fixture last season, Spurs were excellent on the day, as good as I've seen Spurs under Pochettino. They led Liverpool in a merry dance. As I say, Dejan Lovren had an absolute horrible horror show that day. He was hooked after 35 minutes because Jurgen Klopp needed to get some semblance of control back in the football match. I think it was 4-0 or 4-1 the final score was.
Yeah.
And today is a test. This is a big test of Liverpool's title credentials. I thought the big test came away to Leicester. They went there, they won it 2-1. Today's the next test. You take it one game at a time. It's the old cliche. But if Liverpool come away with the 3 points today, that will be 5 wins from 5. And that will again underline why I think they will emerge as Manchester City's biggest title champions.
No Hugo Lloris today.
No Hugo Lloris.
Good reason.
Yes, he has had a couple of weeks to forget, has Hugo Lloris. He was in court at DUI. He's been banned from the roads for, I think, 20 months or so. So he'll have to get a chauffeur in, like I've been doing all my life. You'll have to do that, Hugo. You'll have to dig deep.
I'm not available, unfortunately.
Robbie's not available for Hugo, but yeah, he's going to be missing for the next few weeks. It's Hugo Lloris, and it's a great opportunity for Michael Vorm, a hugely experienced goalkeeper, an international as well, the Netherlands. I've got no qualms about him. He'll be a fine replacement today, and for Spurs, they'll look to hit Liverpool high tempo. I'm looking forward to this match.
Does he keep the captaincy? Or, I mean, there's some sort of debate, wasn't there?
Mauricio Pochettino has come out to defend him and said, listen, he will keep the captaincy. You know, everyone's allowed mistakes, and you know that won't impact him moving forward, which is each to their own. I don't want to criticise Pochettino.
We've got a goal, I think, guys.
Have we got a goal? No, it's offside.
It's offside. There's been a flag. Sorry, Roberto Firmino. Thought he had scored. A ball came into the box. Firmino stuck a boot out. It did end up in the back of the net, but the official has flagged on the far right-hand touchline for an offside. It's marginal. I tell you, it is very marginal. But in fact, I think it might have been Sadio Mane that got the final touch. Either way, it's irrelevant because it is still 0-0. But early signs of danger for Tottenham.
I should give you the Liverpool team, shouldn't I, Tom? I'm just conscious I haven't done that.
Okay, let's have a little look.
Sorry for that.
Sorry,
Liverpool fans out there. You're probably thinking, well, okay, you've given the Spurs team. You've not
dwelled on that.
The Liverpool team, as you would expect, one change from the side that did beat Leicester City 2 weeks ago. Out has gone the skipper, Jordan Henderson. Back in has come a man that I'm such a big fan of in Naby Keita, now wearing the number 8 that was once adorned by Steven Gerrard. So it's Trent Alexander-Arnold in at right back, as you'd expect. Joe Gomez, Virgil van Dijk and Andy Robertson, the Scotsman, in at left back. Midfield three of Jorginho, Wijnaldum, Naby Keita, James Milner, and then that front three, the best front three in the league for me, it is Mo Salah, Roberto Firmino and Sadio Mane.
And Firmino was put through again. It was deflected, I think, for a corner, but Liverpool are showing a lot of menace in the opening 2 minutes of this game. Just 2 minutes on the clock, and Spurs have been under the cosh thus far in this game. Liverpool looking to move the ball around very quickly. There's a corner that's come in, and the ball is cleared over to the far side and out of danger for now. But Liverpool look like they're really going to get at it in the early stages, Chris.
Absolutely. Fine start from Liverpool. They could have been ahead. Marginal offside decision has saved Tottenham a little bit, but it is Liverpool have started the better of the two teams. This one looks as if it'll be an absolute belter. We'll keep you bang up to date as and when the goals go in down at Wembley.
Hassan, thanks so much indeed for your text message. After doing an amazing job at a big team like Valencia, Gary Neville should retire from football. I think he has, isn't he?
I don't see him being in a dugout anytime soon, that's for sure.
That was an experience that he was quick to retreat from.
Mauricio Pochettino is the manager of Tottenham Hotspur. He is entertaining Jurgen Klopp today. He was asked in the build-up to this game whether he thought that Harry Kane could benefit from a rest.
I respect all the opinion, and in football everyone have their opinion. But after that is our fifth season on Tottenham, and if someone know really well him, I think we are. And we know that this is not a situation that worried us. I think it's a situation that is under control. But of course that we respect all the opinion, and maybe some opinion are different to us. But the problem that we are in front, we are the coaching staff in Tottenham, and we take the decision and we try to take the best decision for the player, and but of course for the team.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Yeah, talking of live sport, there is live sport down here aplenty at the moment. Let's get some match reports if we can, or some updates from the live action. Let's go to the Rugby Championship first. That's on the big screen. Poor old Rob, he's going to get a really sore neck by the end of this this afternoon, because he's watching to my left, he's got the football on, and to my right, he's got the rugby on. So what's happening in the rugby first?
Well, it's 3-2 in favour of Australia, Tom, but they are trailing Argentina. Similar sort of story, really, that we saw in the early game between New Zealand and South Africa. Will Jennier, Israel Folau and Dane Haylett-Petty have crossed the line for the Wallabies. Nicolas Sanchez and Bautista Delgai have been the try scorers for Argentina, but the extra penalties from the boot of Emiliano Buffelli and Nicolas Sanchez is what is keeping Argentina just very narrowly in the lead at the moment. 20 points to 19. Don't forget, on Australian turf, so this would be a seismic win if they are able to go on and actually clinch the victory here for Argentina. 67 minutes on the clock, 13 to go. It is Argentina 20, Australia 19, but it's the Wallabies with the territory at the moment, and the Wallabies that are asking a lot of questions of the Argentinian defence, Tom.
Ruben Kazan lead Yezny by 1-0, half an hour in that one. That's from the Russian Premier League. There's an early kickoff over in Spain as well. No goals in that one. No goals in that one as yet. 32 minutes gone. Atletico Madrid taking on Eibar. What about the Premier League? Chris McCarty?
Yeah, 7 minutes on the clock down at Wembley. What a belter to kick things off this weekend. It is Tottenham taking on Liverpool. Liverpool have been much the better team in the opening exchanges. They had the ball in the back of the net inside 40 seconds. Roberto Firmino, it was, with the goal. It was. I'm still not sure if it was rightly chalked off or not. The linesman's flag went up. If it was marginal. So Liverpool have had the ball in the back of the net. Signs that Spurs just starting to get into this match somewhat. It is still early on. Liverpool, though, in the early exchanges, are asking all the questions. Tottenham 0, Liverpool 0.
It's the Vitality Blast T20 finals day over at Edgbaston Cracking event. If ever you get the opportunity to go to a finals day for the T20 Blast, then do get yourself there. Worcester Rapids are taking on Lancashire Lightning, the first of the two semi-finals. That will be followed by the finals. So three games there this afternoon. Lancs Lightning need 153 runs to win from 18 overs. The Worcestershire Rapids finishing on 169 for the loss of 6. Lancashire 2 overs in, and it's 17 without the loss of a wicket. So lots of sport for us to get our head round, lots of sport to get in touch with, none more so than the Formula 1, because they are under the lights in Singapore over the weekend. Final practice is underway as we speak at the moment. Let's just remind ourselves what's happened in practice to date.
Sebastian Vettel might have the best record of the current drivers at Singapore, but it was street circuit maestro Daniel Ricciardo who set the pace at Marina Bay in FP1. His Red Bull teammate Max Verstappen was next fastest, but neither driver was completely happy during the session.
I have some weird sliding going on.
Driveability sucked that lap.
Understood.
Behind them, drivers were finding the limits on the way to their hot laps. They were all harmless lock-ups and spins until the very end of the session, when Charles Leclerc tagged the wall at the kink on the Anderson Bridge, tearing the suspension from the front right of his Sauber. A disappointing end to a session in which a P9 finish showed the potential of the package. Nico Hülkenberg had a special helmet for his 150th race this weekend, and with fifth fastest in practice ahead of championship leader Lewis Hamilton, it could be a memorable weekend. For Silver Arrows fans, FP1 could be viewed as something of a disappointment on paper, but with both Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas making mistakes, and with neither having run the Hypersoft tyres, there's clearly speed to be found. Lewis Hamilton has never qualified outside the top five in Singapore. Sauber and Haas were close together on the cusp of the top 10. After their Monza controversy and disqualification, Haas have a new floor this weekend and will be looking to dial it in further as the sessions continue. McLaren had a difficult session, Stoffel Vandoorne finishing at the bottom of the timesheets with the fewest laps as the team trialled new parts, while Alonso briefly had a power outage.
Low power.
And it should have recovered by now.
No.
The teams will be looking to perfect their cars for FP2, where conditions will be closest to those for qualifying. Will Mercedes find a match to the early speed of Red Bull and Ferrari?
So let's get over to Singapore. We're just talking off air about the prospects, the opportunities getting over to Singapore. It's one you'd like to do.
Absolutely,
yeah?
It is. Yeah, it's the street circuit over there. I'm not quite sure what it does for getting around the city in race weekend, because I'm sure it'll be that much more difficult, but it just looks great. It's under the lights there, it's the street circuit. There is something magical about a street circuit as well. And what I can tell you, Tom, just to give you a quick update on P3, it has just come to an end. Qualifying will be shortly, but we've seen Ferrari dominate once again in P3. Sebastian Vettel the fastest, Kimi Raikkonen second fastest, then come the Mercedes of Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas, Daniel Ricciardo in the Red Bull. Of course, Daniel Ricciardo will be moving on at the end of this season to join Renault, and Max Verstappen in its sixth to round out the top six. So yeah, looking forward to this one. It is under the lights. Qualifying as well should be exciting, and it is Ferrari, Sebastian Vettel, 30 points behind Lewis Hamilton in the driver standings, who needs a victory, I think needs a performance this weekend, just to remind Lewis Hamilton that he is there and he's still very much in this race to clinch what would be, for both drivers, a fifth world title.
It's good, turning into a great finale. It's business end of the season, obviously, and a lot to look forward to with this one, and all sorts of sort of subplots going on. We had the Fernando Alonso retirement saga over the last couple of weeks. Kimi Raikkonen has been making the headlines over the last few days as well. He's on his way. We know that Leclerc's going to come in as a replacement, which is a new dawn for Singapore, young 20-year-old, big future in the game. Kimi, though, the move for him, what's going on? It's bizarre.
I find it a bit bizarre. He's 38 now, is Kimi Raikkonen, won the world championship. In fact, the last man in a Ferrari to win a world championship. Yep. Got to go all the way back to 2007. And
I can understand why he would want to continue in a team that isn't Ferrari, because he's probably quite fed up of playing second fiddle to Sebastian Vettel, and especially given the errors that Ferrari have made. I found it interesting that Mercedes have very much put all their eggs in Hamilton's basket, and Valtteri Bottas has been a team driver, very much a number two. Kimi Raikkonen, we saw it in the last Grand Prix with that fastest ever lap in qualifying. He's not following the script. Kimi is actually rebelling against, I'm sure Ferrari are pushing Sebastian Vettel, and they know he's the chance they've got to win a championship, and they would probably rather Kimi Raikkonen just does everything in his power to help Ferrari win, but I think he's got other ideas, and I can understand why he would want to get out from under the shadow of Sebastian Vettel and race in a smaller car with smaller ambitions.
And I do think there is, perhaps, you're absolutely right, a bit of truth to that Kimi Raikkonen stepping out undoubtedly of the shadow of Sebastian Vettel, but going into a smaller team and it'll be built around him, where they'll be leaning on his experience with a car, with a setup, just how they go about doing things. So, but I'm sure that Kimi Raikkonen will have very much a hands-on kind of approach off the grid and off the tracks as much as he will on it as well. So perhaps he's maybe thinking of long-term as future after F1, because who knows, Kimi might want a future, perhaps, I don't know, owning a team in the coming years as well. So watch this space with that one. And for Leclerc, what an opportunity it is to learn from an absolute legend of the sport that Sebastian Vettel is.
A lot of thinking going into this. A question that a lot of those in the pit throughout the week have been asking is, why is Kimi leaving? Let's try and give you an answer.
Formula One returns this weekend in Singapore. Lewis Hamilton leads the standings by 30 points after his win in Italy, but Ferrari are likely to have the strongest car for this circuit this weekend. Let's go live now to Singapore and Sky Sports' Ted Kravitz. Morning, Ted. Significant changes afoot at Ferrari for next season. Kimi Raikkonen moving to Sauber. Just let's take that move in isolation for once. Is there more to it than him simply wanting to extend his race career?
Yes, good morning, Craig, or good afternoon here in Singapore. I think there is a bit more to it, you know. Kimi obviously wanted to keep racing. He loves the racing. He loves it when racing is pure. The politics, the money side, the business side, he can really do without. And that's why I think this move to Sauber makes sense for Kimi Raikkonen. There are suggestions that he's going to get involved in a team management role in Sauber, and that's where he sees his future. Kimi is a man of few words, so I'm not sure whether you can see him reading the riot act to his drivers if he doesn't like what they're doing. But anyway, maybe he's a strong word softly spoken. But yeah, I think there is a little bit more to it than that. But really, the focus, you're right, Craig, is on Ferrari. Because as Enzo Ferrari once said, we want winners. We don't want the people who come second and third. And I think with Kimi Raikkonen, they just realised that maybe he wasn't a winner anymore. And they see potential in his replacement, young Charles Leclerc. Whether he is a winner or whether he's just there to come second or third will, of course, remain to be seen in the years ahead.
Well, he is still Ferrari's last world champion, Ted. Is Leclerc's promotion as much about perhaps Vettel ever so slightly underperforming in the last few years as much as Raikkonen maybe not getting them enough points to win that Constructors' Championship?
I'm not sure about that, Craig. You know, I mean, it's certainly the talk of the paddock. This is partly to put pressure on Sebastian Vettel, but Sebastian Vettel is a four-time world champion. He knows what he's doing, and he's been in Ferrari long enough. He knows how to make the wheels work at Ferrari. So I don't think he'll be scared of a newcomer, a 20-year-old Charles Leclerc, just yet. But I think this is for the future. This is future planning for Ferrari. They see Charles Leclerc as someone who can battle Max Verstappen when Verstappen eventually comes of age and starts challenging for championships at Red Bull Racing.
Okay. But the Italian media are squarely blaming Vettel for his mistakes over the course of maybe the last couple of seasons for not landing the championship with Ferrari. Tell us about the pressure. Is it continuing to mount on Vettel? And will he be blamed squarely if he doesn't go and clinch the Drivers' Championship this year?
Well, Ferrari have the fastest car, so I think he will be blamed if Ferrari don't deliver the World Championship. But, you know, they win and lose as a team. When the car doesn't work or when the strategy goes wrong, then they have to take that on the chin just as much as Vettel does when he makes the odd mistake or two. But I think from Vettel's point of view, this is a must-win race. I know we tend to say this quite a lot, but this is the race to win for Sebastian Vettel. He goes well here. He goes better than anybody else. This is an unrelenting series of corners that a technical driver like Vettel seems to just have under control, whereas an instinctive Street Fighter-style driver from Lewis Hamilton suddenly... This kind of track layout doesn't really give him the chance to shine. So if Vettel can't win here, then I think it really is trouble for the World Championship. But that's the kind of challenge that he likes.
Well, Vettel didn't win in Monaco, and that's the track which maybe most closely resembles this one. What about the Red Bull factor here? I suppose it could work in Lewis Hamilton's favour, depriving Ferrari and Vettel of a win. I suppose it could also work, could it, in Vettel's favour, knocking Hamilton even further down the standings and getting an even bigger points haul in Vettel's advantage?
Red Bull will be the disruptors. There's absolutely no question about that. They fancy their chances here. And actually, the interesting dynamic there, Craig, I think, will be between Max Verstappen and Daniel Ricciardo, because Daniel Ricciardo has not been on the podium since he won the race in Monaco. Thinking about that, at the beginning of the summer, in springtime, when Monaco happened, back in May time, he hasn't been on the podium since, Ricciardo. And this is the kind of track that he likes. It's a bit nearer his home in Australia than most circuits that we go to. Max Verstappen has often had a little bit of a funny time here, just getting to grips with how close the walls are. Doesn't tend to go well with Verstappen's exuberant style. So the fight between Ricciardo and Verstappen will be as tight as the fight between Red Bull and Ferrari to challenge Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes.
The Grill. Live from Barasti, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now.
Hey, let's put in the picture of what's happening in the world of sport. A thrilling finale in the Rugby Championship. It's the last minute of regular time. Robbie Greenfield, where's this one going?
Well, at the moment, it's going the way of Argentina. Quite extraordinary that Emiliano Buffelli was able to convert yet another long-range penalty in the 76th minute, Tom. And Argentina, they've ceded possession in these last few moments to Australia. This is last chance saloon here for the Wallabies, and they're running towards the corner. It's a brilliant burst, actually. The number 23 has been tackled about 5-6 yards out from the Argentinian line, but the Australians are trailing 23 points to 19. And they need to cross for a try if they're to win this one. It's a thrilling finish here in Australia. They've switched the play to the far side. There's a real chance here if he can put the pass in. Oh, that is an absolute howler from your man. He had a clear pass open to him. He decided to go it alone. And a knock-on has...
Falau.
That's it. The referee has blown up. And it is Israel Falau.
What's he
doing? And Argentina have a win. That was the most simple of offloads, and he's failed to make it.
He's wanted the glory all to himself. Argentina have won this one, 23 points to 19. What a finish. Heroic effort from the Pumas. What a win, and what a seismic weekend it's been. South Africa, the Springbok, beating All Blacks down in Wellington earlier today, and then the RGs have followed that up by going over to Australia, winning 23 points to 19. Oh, Israel Folau, though, what are you doing? We'll watch a repeat of it here. Oh, what a tackle as well.
Massive tackle, though, isn't
it? Oh, huge. But look, is that Bernard Foley?
Yep.
It is. Bernard Foley's on the outside. Just needs a simple of offloads. And he does that. Oh, my goodness.
He's run into a wall of three Argentinians.
And he's got Bernard Foley to his right-hand side.
Unmarked,
who would have just crossed the line and won it.
Extraordinary end to the second of what has been an extraordinary day in the Rugby Championship. The two underdogs victorious, the two visiting sides victorious down in New Zealand and Australia respectively.
Michael,
so victory. Michael Checker.
Disbelief, I think, is the only
disbelief,
one.
But also, I mean,
disgust at
Falau.
There
will be a question mark over his future now.
Absolutely,
sure.
There will be. That face there told a story there. It painted a picture, disgusted with his team, disgusted with probably himself as well, and not getting the team. Obviously he'll take some of the responsibility for the performance on his shoulders, but yeah, there will be serious question marks now asked of Michael Checker. What are we? We're just over a year out from the 2019 Rugby World Cup finals, and serious question marks again being asked of the Wallabies and being asked of Michael Checker.
Certainly, and they've only got themselves to blame. They've really gifted Argentina the win in that match, not only due to the fact that they squandered a lot of chances earlier on, but the Giltez chance that they missed in that last few seconds of the match, which led to the Argentinian victory. There'll be some recriminations in that dressing room. There'll be a lot of introspection as well, not only from the coach Michael Checker, who will have to now go and face the media and try and explain this one away, because it's one thing losing to New Zealand, but it's quite another to host Argentina and actually lose and go down 23 points to 19. Dark times for Australian rugby.
We've also got the football, no goals in Tottenham against Liverpool, no goals in the Atletico Eibar game as well, half time in that Spanish game, and 24 minutes on the clock, Tottenham against Liverpool. Let's turn our attention to cricket's T20 Blast finals day at the moment. Going to keep an eye on that one. Also, number of stories to talk about. We've got cricket on our own doorstep here, haven't we?
We do. Day one and match one, should I say, of the Asia Cup. Pakistan, India, they'll be taking to the field to face one another for the first time as well, incidentally, here in Dubai. But what a start Sri Lanka have made. So Bangladesh are currently batting. This, of course, 50 overs for both sides. Bangladesh currently 4-2, Tom. So two wickets have already fallen inside the opening 3.4 overs to be exact. Iqbal is gone and Das is gone as well. Das and Hassan have both gone, and it was that man, Malinga, who has got them both gone for a duck. So already Bangladesh are up against it, and it could be from here. Oi, oi, oi. It could be, I was going to say, a long day for them. It could be a quick day if Sri Lanka bowlers and Malinga in particular continue doing what they've done in this opening stages. Bangladesh 4-2.
Edge Cup ongoing. First game of the tournament down at the Dubai International Cricket Stadium. Over at Edgbaston in the UK, you've got Worcestershire Rapids taking on Lancashire Lightning in the first of the semi-finals for this year, for today's T20 finals day. Lancashire Lightning have just lost their first wicket. They're 44 for the loss of one wicket in response to Worcestershire's 169. Significant week for cricket over in the UK. A couple of big name departures, none more so than Paul Collingwood.
It's a bit sad. I think
you know, ex-players always tell you, you know, that the times come to retire. And, you know, yesterday announcing it to the boys that I was retiring from cricket was a pretty emotional time, to be honest. That was a bit of a blubbering wreck. But yeah, I think everybody realises that it's time now. The club realise that, I realise that. And, you know, I've put all my efforts in over the last however many years I've been playing the game. And, you know, that's going to be it after two more games.
How did the boys respond to that? Did it come as a shock?
Well, I was in tears, to be honest with you. So I think it did come as a bit of a shock. But, yeah, look, it's... I think they realise that I've put all my energies into the club, into my playing career. And, you know, there comes a time where you don't have much energy left. And I think it's good for Durham and for myself that I move on and to get a new leader in the dressing room and hopefully move on and go and do some special things that we've done in the past 20 years or so. You always have niggles. I think every player, whether you're 20 year old or you're 42, you know, professional sport is a tough environment, and you always have niggles. But yeah, I think it's more the mental side and not being able to probably produce the performances that you could in the past, and that is quite frustrating at times. And but look, I've got no regrets. I think you know, it's just right that, you know, at 42 year old that it's time to move on and find different avenues that you're going to go down for the rest of your career.
Paul Collingwood, retiring from first class cricket at the ripe old age of 42 years old. He'll still be involved for sure. In fact, he's going to be involved here in the UAE. He signed up for the T20X and a couple of the other series, forthcoming series. A great servant of the game. I'm sure he'll be involved in the years to come.
Certainly was, yeah. And he's a man that we've met, in fact, out here, Chris,
like
in the T20 that was held last year. But no, really solid, straight talking character.
Absolutely.
And yeah, absolutely no nonsense. And,
what a long
and successful career he's had.
Do you think it might be a little bit miffed that his retirement's been overshadowed by somebody else's this week?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't think he'll be all that miffed. I think there's an awful lot of goodwill being directed in the direction of Alistair Cook at the moment, and I think he deserves it. He really is a good egg, as they say, and I think fitting that he made the runs that he did at the Oval when he's been in such awful form, the kind of form that really brought about his retirement. And then ironically, as soon as he announces his retirement, he goes and makes a 147 in his final test, and a first century, I think, since back end of 2017. But it brought out a lot of emotion at the Oval. England wrapped up that 4-1 series victory over India. And let's hear now from another man who set his own milestone in that test match. He surpassed Glenn McGrath as the highest wicket taker in test cricket among the fast bowlers. Jimmy Anderson, of course, had these words and a tribute to pay to Alistair Cook in the aftermath of that match.
It's hard to explain, really, because I don't want to play it down too much, but it doesn't mean a great deal to me. Like, today was all about winning a test match. It was about giving Cookie a good send-off, the send-off that he deserved. So that's like, for me, that's what today's focus was on. It's certainly what my focus was on. When Alistair told us that he was retiring as well, I mean, for me, he's just been kind of he's obviously a very good friend, but he's been someone that I look up to, and, you know, the way his work ethic and the way he conducts himself, he's a real kind of idol to not just me, but to the rest of the team. He's an amazing guy. I'm trying to hold it together now. But he is, he's an amazing bloke. Just so solid, down to earth. And really cares about people, cares about English cricket. So I think what he's done, not just on the field, but for English cricket as a whole, is something that should be recognised, and it'll be missed as well.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.